How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 161 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, and subscribe to the podcast there. Leave a review once you're on that page and find us on audioboom.com. Log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. You can see all my Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. Last show of the week going on right now. And I have a wonderful welcomed guest, Matt Tynan. Spurs know-it-all. He's covering the game, freelancer, covering the game for a bunch of covering games for a bunch of places. Always one of my favorite Spurs bloggers. Matt, what's going on?
Oh, not much, man. Quite a game tonight, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. So let's give the background. Thunder played the Spurs, snapped a four-game losing streak. They lost four straight games to teams under 500. So it only made sense that they would beat the 50-14
right.
Spurs. But 102-92 in a game where they were, and honestly was a little bit less close than the score implies. They were pretty much up like 8 to 14 points that whole way. I forget what their biggest lead was. I think they got up 20 at one point. And the Spurs didn't have Parker. They didn't have Ginobili. Kawhi got hurt, something with his face, and didn't play at all in the fourth quarter. I still thought it was a really impressive win for the Thunder, though.
Oh, man. You have to – any time that the Thunder, especially with the situation like you just mentioned, that they've lost four in a row, this has not been an easy stretch for the Thunder to beat the Spurs. And look – yeah, no Tony Parker, no Manu Ginobili. They're not quite the same players they used to be. There was a fresh Kawhi Leonard. There was a fresh LaMarcus Aldridge tonight. So it's an impressive win for the Thunder, and they needed it. They needed it. I mean, it was a big, big win for the Oklahoma City Thunder in this situation. And it's kind of unbelievable. I was just looking at the standings, and even after losing four consecutive games, they just jumped up into the sixth seed because the Memphis Grizzlies are in a sort of lull, so to speak. So this was an important win for the Oklahoma City Thunder. That's for sure.
Yeah, there's no question. The Grizzlies have lost four in a row right now, which is really big for the Thunder right now. They're tied to the Thunder. Thunder technically have the tiebreaker for now. That could change. They play in Memphis again later this year. Let's go on this game a little bit. So Russell Westbrook had 23, 13, and 13. Mm-hmm. Coming into this game, so this is a crazy stat. Over the previous six games leading into this one, Russell Westbrook's usage was 49%. Which is crazy.
I can't even. I'm sorry. I'm just going to laugh the rest of the podcast. Like I can't even fathom that as even possible. It's difficult to digest, man. You're the one that's in the building every night. You're the one that's around these guys every night. Like, how are you? Like when Kobe was doing this, I believe that the previous record holder for usage rate for usage percentage is Kobe Bryant. I can't exactly remember the number that
05,
it is.
0506. It was 38.7%.
There you go. There you go.
According to Basketball Reference usage, that number has become very relevant to my job.
Yeah, it's obsolete.
Year.
It's obsolete. Like it's become obsolete. It's like a computer that becomes obsolete every couple of years.
Yeah,
it's like,
Russ is going to crush that. He's going to crush that.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. You're the one in the building every night, man. Like it seems unfathomable. It's so difficult to digest just in general the things that this guy is doing on a regular basis every single night. Like, it's not like there's every once in a while he takes a night off. It's not like every once in a while, he has a down game for Russell Westbrook is not getting a triple double. But you're in the building every night. Like, this is insane to watch. It really is insane to watch. Like, how are you digesting this just in general?
It is crazy with the amount. So with the amount that he was putting up shots leading into this game, it was insane. Like that 50, because he had 58 in the previous game, the game against Portland on 39 shots. And you know what? Usage to some degree, like I think to some degree he obviously takes bad shots at times. There's no
sure, of course,
there's no question about that. His staunchest supporters say that. But any NBA player will tell you getting up a number of shots is a skill. Like, not every player can just go out there and take 25 shots. It's a skill to get up shots. It's a skill to be able to get up shots. His ability to get up shots is pretty amazing. Even if they're bad shots,
especially like
amazing.
the ability to get up, for whatever people want to say about Russell Westbrook and talking about the bad shots he takes, he gets a lot of quality shots off. Like, shots that he is capable of making that maybe, the normal human wouldn't consider being a quality shot. But, like, this dude is not just flinging shots over his head. Like, he's getting shots up where he is beating people off the dribble or he is elevating above his defender. They're all, I guess it's up to debate. It's up for debate whether or not, like, the majority of these are quote-unquote quality shots. But I would say that considering the freak athleticism that Russell Westbrook possesses, these are quality shots. And they're obviously putting his team in a place that, maybe a lot of people felt like they wouldn't be when the season started.
I think tonight, too. Tonight was interesting because tonight, so it was 49% over the previous six coming into tonight. Tonight, it mellowed out down to 34, which is high for a normal person, but below Russ's season average by a pretty decent amount. He had 23, 13, and 13. He wasn't incredibly efficient. He wasn't efficient in terms of his shooting. He was 7 of 21, but I thought he was far more efficient in terms of his decision making. He was getting guys going early. The pick and roll with Steven Adams was working really well in the first half. He was deferring to Victor Oladipo a little bit more. He was getting Oladipo spot up threes, which is a major, major part of their offense. And Oladipo went 3 of 4 from three in this game after going 4 of 5 in the previous game. So he's been shooting really well since coming back from the back injury. Now, what is that, 4 or 7, 7 of 9 now in those two games since coming back from the back injury. But I just thought his decision-making, his ability to distribute tonight was so much better. And I actually thought he played an okay defensive game too, which is not always something you see from Westbrook.
Right.
He'll gamble a lot and he'll die on screens and he won't always close out on guys and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and honestly, like, if you look over the, it's been quite a few years now that the Thunder and the Spurs have been rivals, have been a premier matchup in the NBA, and he's struggled against the Spurs. The Spurs have done a really good job of defending him. They've sort of, to an extent, and this obviously, there were many, many, many minutes where he was playing alongside Kevin Durant, but they would kind of goad him into the mid-range jumpers. They would kind of distract him in terms of, like, trying to get him into situations where he would be more vulnerable or sort of his offensive weaknesses. This has been, if you look over the course of the last several years, if you look at Russ's stats, obviously this is a guy who is more than capable of killing a guy like Tony Parker in one-on-one matchups, but the Spurs have been really good at disguising coverages, at sort of bringing him into situations where he's not going to be as effective as he might, as he normally would be. Man, tonight was impressive. It's been a while since the Thunder looked this good against the Spurs. Like, let's be honest. Outside of last year's playoffs, late in the year, but when you look at, over the last few years, especially when Kevin Durant has been out of the lineup and you've seen the Russell Westbrook led Oklahoma City Thunder against the Spurs, it has not gone well. Tonight went really, really well. And I think the Spurs have been on the, back end of sort of a brutal stretch of schedule. But at the same time, you really cannot discount the fact that after four consecutive losses, which is obviously a big deal, and obviously the Thunder are not in any danger of losing the seventh seed, but or at least dropping back in terms of getting past or going back to the eighth seed or whatever. But they have a real chance of getting up into the six. Well, they are six now, but five, four, they have a chance of getting to, potentially home court in the first round. And, so a game like tonight, against one of the best teams in the NBA, this is a really, really impressive win.
Yeah, it's a big win for them too, because they've got Utah coming up. If they're on a five game losing streak going into the Utah game, that's a big deal. I want to talk about Kawhi though. I know Kawhi had to leave this game because of a facial injury, a head injury. We don't really know what happened. He got hit at some point. He didn't play the fourth quarter. You don't know the injury. We don't really know what it is at this point. And we're recording this late on Friday night. So maybe by the time people listen to this podcast, we'll have a greater idea. But as of now, we don't really know.
Right.
Kawhi, though, in 26 minutes, 19 points, 2 boards, 2 assists. Didn't really guard Russell Westbrook. I imagine that's a weapon they would have used in crunch time if the game got close or something. But
yeah,
he wasn't really guarding Westbrook at all in this game. And I thought Andre Robertson, look, Kawhi is unbelievable. He is amazing. He's becoming one of my favorite players. He is, without question, a top five player. Without question, a top four MVP candidate. If I had to fill out a ballot today, I'd have him third on my MVP ballot.
Okay.
He is amazing. And something that I've said on the podcast like three times this week, because I do think it needs to be nailed into people's heads. Everyone talks about how what Russell Westbrook is doing statistically is something that nobody's done before. But the best defensive player in the NBA has never averaged 26 a game on nearly 50, 40, 90 shooting either. So that's a thing that no one's done before either. So like what Kawhi is doing this year is also unprecedented and incredible. And those are not like random meaningless stats so that you can push it forward. Like those are normal mainstream useful stats. Like it's amazing what he's doing, but I thought Andre Robertson did a really good job on him tonight.
Yeah,
I thought this was one of Dre's best defensive performances in a little while.
Yeah, he did. Your audience, is familiar with how capable Andre Robertson is as a defender. Like that guy can play. He has the type of length that can deal with a guy like Kawhi, and there are very few people who have the type of length that can deal with Kawhi. I mean, Kawhi's not an athletic freak. He is a physical freak. He is 6'7" with a 7'3" wingspan. Like that's not normal. That's not the type of NBA player most shooting guards, small forwards are used to defending. He's a special player. I think one of the things that's always stuck out is we love is in terms of from a Thunder perspective is we love this guy. We love his defense. We love his rebounding, but man, I wish he could shoot, blah, blah, blah. Sometimes when you have the capability of defending somebody like Kawhi Leonard, who, as you just mentioned, is over 26 points a game, nearly 50, 40, 90, which, you know, I was actually thinking about this last night. I'm not sure going forward, giving the inflated offensive, the way the NBA has gone in terms of inflated offensive numbers, if averaging a triple-double or averaging 50, 40, 90 would be more rare. Like, I honestly do not know which one would be more rare, and I don't even think Kawhi is going to get to the 50, 40, 90. He's a couple of percentage points below each of those numbers, but that's just an aside. Robertson was really impressive, and Kawhi had issues tonight. Kawhi, and from what I've heard, I wasn't in the building. I've talked to a few people. It sounds like he's okay. It sounds like everything was a bit precautionary. You may have a bit more knowledge on this than I do because building.
I've got nothing.
Well, just in general, I think at this point, I would assume he's going to play Saturday night against the Warriors, but I'm not quite sure. Like I said, the people who I have talked to that I trust, think he probably will, think he's probably okay. Sounds like more of a precautionary thing. Andre Robertson, and this goes back to last year, man. This goes back to last year, the year before. Like, this guy is skilled. He is a talented individual. He doesn't have a great shot. I know that's been really frustrating for Thunder fans, but man, that guy can defend the hell out of the ball.
Yeah, Kawhi and Robertson, I think they both. I mean, Kawhi is obviously going to be first team all defense. I think Dre has a pretty good chance of getting first team all defense too, just as a guard. I think you'll see.
Draymond, oh, do you Green think so?
I think you'll see Draymond Green and Kawhi as the forwards. Robertson technically starts at small forward, but he mostly guards ones and twos. So I think you can. Gotcha. I think it's one of those things where, like, you know, you know it well, because sometimes Tim Duncan is first team all defense as a forward, and sometimes he's there as a center. And it's just kind of like, he's so good that he should be first team. So how can we maneuver it so that he's first team? And I think Dre.
Yeah, the guy can flat out defend. The guy can flat out defend. Like, whether it's a guard, whether it's a forward. Obviously, he's going to be stuck onto the shooting guard or the small forward. Those are sort of the primary positions that he's going to be defending.
Yeah, but he's guarded point guards a lot. Like, he guards Harden. He guards Chris Paul. He guards Isaiah Thomas. I think because, like, those are his primary assignments in those sorts of games. And I think if you look at stuff like he guards ones and twos as much as he guards threes, or more than guards threes. I think you can probably fudge it and justify putting him on first team as a guard as opposed to second team as a forward.
Yeah.
I think Danny Green is the best transition defender in the NBA.
Oh, well, I think Danny Green will forever be sort of like the long forgotten perimeter defender in the NBA. You know, I always sort of harken back to a low post podcast. This was about 2 years ago, I guess, when Zach Lowe, the great Zach Lowe, had JJ Redick on his podcast, and he said, "Who is the most difficult perimeter defender that you've had to deal with, you know, throughout your career?" And JJ Redick obviously is a badass. Sorry if I can say that.
Okay.
All right. but his answer was interesting to me. He said, "You know, it's not one person. It's a two man combo." He said Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green. He said that duo on the perimeter is so impossible to deal with. There was a stat, Jordan Howenstein, who's one of the media relations guys with the San Antonio Spurs, tweeted this out last night. Danny Green is the only player in the NBA over the last six seasons who has averaged or who has accumulated more than 100 threes and more than 40 blocks in the same season for 6 years. The only player for 6 years to do that. Spurs fans get mad at Danny Green for some reason. I don't get it because I guess he can't dribble. He really can't dribble. But Danny Green, well, I don't want to compare Danny Green and Andre Robertson offensively because Danny Green can shoot, but Andre Robertson to me is a guy who makes things so difficult for shooting guards, for small forwards, and like you brought up, he guards point guards, and Danny Green does the same thing. Those two guys are very similar on the defensive end, not on the offensive end, obviously, but on the defensive end. They remind me a lot of one another. But yeah, Danny Green is so underappreciated. And he's never on the all defensive teams. He's never in the 3-point shooting contests. And I don't really understand why.
He's never made all defense, right?
No.
I was talking about that with Royce tonight. We were saying, I don't think he's ever made all defense, which is crazy.
It's crazy.
I feel like he's got a good argument for this year. Spurs are number one in defense. You look around at the rest of the team, there aren't Kawhi is obviously amazing. Dwayne Dedman's having a really good defensive season.
Yeah, he is.
But he hasn't played enough minutes to where it's like, well, they're number one in defense. It's because they have Dwayne Dedman. He's not playing enough minutes for that to be the reason. LaMarcus Aldridge is an underrated defensive player.
He's
a good to really good defender, and he has some nights where he looks awesome. But, he's not solely going to hold up a number one defense. And Kawhi mm-hmm. will solely hold up a number one defense. But, Danny Green is a massive part of this.
Oh, yeah. No, they put – so, you know, it's difficult to gauge with Kawhi because he sort of has, in a sense, carte blanche in terms of when he wants to defend the best player. Like the other night against the Rockets, there was a big sort of thing after the game where Danny Green had a quote that said, "Hey, man, I'll take James Harden for a little bit in this fourth quarter if you want a break." And Kawhi said, no, I want him all fourth quarter. And James Harden scored 4 points the entire fourth quarter. But Danny Green does a lot of dirty work for the Spurs on the perimeter defensively. And he doesn't get the credit. And honestly, man, I don't think he'll get any sort of, all defensive team recognition this year. He'll get some votes. You know, we'll see it in the aftermath. We'll see some people that put out some votes for Danny Green. But he's probably not going to get it. I still have no idea why he's never been invited to the 3-point contest. I have no clue why that hasn't happened, considering the people who have been involved in that All-Star Weekend contest. He just sort of flies under the radar, man. He's the best shot blocking guard since prime D Wade. And I don't know where, where in the ether that recognition flies off to. But he is super important to what the Spurs do, critical to what the Spurs do. He's critical to their scheme. He's critical to allowing Kawhi Leonard to, sort of range, try different things, be off the ball. He's great at defending point guards. He's been great at defending point guards for years. You know, I know you've only been covering the Thunder for a couple of years now, but he was instrumental in the Spurs defending that team by his ability to cover Russell Westbrook and allowing Kawhi to really focus on defending Kevin Durant. You know, obviously that just in general is an impossible matchup for both of those guys. But He has been just an absolutely critical player and so instrumental in the Spurs' success over the last few years that I was even yelling on Twitter today about the fact that this guy among Spurs fans goes underappreciated. The fact that he was taken off of a scrap heap out of Cleveland and just signed to a contract in San Antonio, even was let go and then came back. Like it's a really unbelievable story that this guy is, making $10-11 million a year. It's a tribute to that dude's, tenacity. It's a really cool story. And he continues to impress along the way. That's for sure.
He's particularly good at blocking jump shots. Most guards who block shots are, doing it in a conventional way around the rim. But he's blocked Stephen Curry threes. He blocked an Alex Abrams three tonight. Where I was like, how did he do that? He just times it. He times it so well. He's so good at that.
Yeah, Steph Curry had one shot blocked all year last year, and it was Danny Green blocking a jump shot. That was it. that was it. Or one jump shot. I'm not quite sure if that has any. I would bet probably that he had a shot blocked around the rim. But in terms of a jump shot, Danny Green was the only one to block him last season on a jump shot.
Yeah, that's that is what he does. The Thunder bench tonight was pretty good too.
Yeah,
Samaje Christen played about as well as Samaje Christen is going to play without putting up a shot.
Right.
Played just short of 19 minutes, and I thought he was really pesky on the ball and did a really good job defensively, which is why he played. And that was an interesting move by Donovan, because Norris Cole had been getting the backup point guard minutes since they started goal, and Christen ended up getting a bunch off the bench and playing the thing about Samaje Christen is he's a good on ball defender, and they'll use him in situations where they need some decent on ball defense. And I guess that's what they got. But the question I have for you is, how do you feel about the fact that Domantas Sabonis has now dunked on David Lee and Dwayne Dedman?
I mean, that's fine. I don't have a huge reaction to that. I actually have more of a reaction to the fact that, especially since the Thunder, had to get rid of Russell Westbrook's dance partner, that they have a guy like Christian coming up and playing the type of minutes that he is and contributing the way he is. But Sabonis, man, I think every NBA fan, especially NBA fans who are our age, right, are who remember who Sabonis's father was and what he was, how fun he was to watch, that we get to see his kid do things like that. He's very clearly talented. He can shoot. He's athletic. This is the sort of thing that we sort of envisioned. I am not a viewer of college basketball until the tournament comes around. I will admit that. But man, Sabonis is fun to watch, man. He is a skilled dude. Obviously you would hope so, considering who his father was, considering the genes that guy probably passed down to his kid. But hey, man, look, a lot of people have dunked on David Lee. I'm guessing a lot of people have probably dunked on Dwayne Dedman, and I'm not going to be critical of those guys. Like, David Lee has been really good for the Spurs this year. He has been really, really solid for the Spurs this year, and he has actually been pretty damn good defensively, to be honest. He's had some moments where you're like, oh my God, was that David Lee? And then Dedman obviously he has a player option going into next year, and he is building himself a portfolio, for teams next year. I think the Spurs would probably be wise to, they're going to be in a situation. They're going to be in a complicated situation next year because of the Pau Gasol contract, which is also a player option and something he would be crazy to opt out of unless he's just a really good sport or unless the Spurs, mind bleep him into deciding to opt out or whatever going forward. Who knows what happens next year. That's beside the point. I digress
yourself. I digress,
but really impressed with Sabonis. Really enjoyed watching him tonight. I think there's a lot there. I think there's a lot of talent there. I think there's a lot of potential there. Man, that guy's got some range. He has athleticism. He has a skill level that a lot of guys his size do not have. So he's going to be a fun dude to watch develop.
Yeah, and he's been, hitting the rookie wall lately. But the Thunder love him, man. The Thunder love him.
I'm sure they think he's their future power forward,
and they we haven't even talked about the change in the starting lineup. I guess it's talking about Sabonis, inadvertently did, and they started Taj Gibson tonight. They still played Taj and Sabonis basically the same amount of minutes they were playing before. Sabonis played 20, Gibson played 22, which is actually more minutes than Sabonis was averaging off the bench. Granted, he got some garbage time minutes to throw that number up a little bit, but I mean, Sabonis was a
plus 7 tonight. I mean, like he was absolutely a factor tonight, and I feel like it was probably only a matter of time before Taj Gibson entered the starting lineup because it's Taj Gibson and he is a really solid player, and I you can even go beyond solid. Like, that guy is a really good veteran player, and I thought that was a great. Just in general, the Thunder did a hell of a job at the trade deadline. Like, they really did. That acquisition bolstered their team significantly. I didn't mean to interrupt you there, man. That's fun to watch. And Sabonis, man, you know what? Sabonis is fine coming off the bench. He might even be better coming off the bench. If he gets to play against bench units more often than not, he's going to be able to handle that. Taj Gibson can handle those starting lineups. I think Sabonis, especially against certain matchups in the NBA in terms of starting lineups, like that's a tough thing to jump into as a rookie. And I think this is actually a really good situation for him because, that guy has some energy. He has size and length and athleticism and energy. And I think that's a really, look, coming from a guy who has watched the Spurs for a long time, there's nothing wrong with having a really good player coming off your bench. I was impressed by Sabonis tonight.
Anything to plug before we go?
I'm going to be in San Antonio, on Saturday night for Spurs Warriors. So that should be pretty fun. I will be writing for both Real GM and USA Today. So you can find, you know, I'm not exactly sure when everything's going to post, but in the following days, I'm guessing late Saturday night, early Sunday morning, you can find me, Matthew Tynan, at Matthew _ Tynan. Yeah, you can find me there. And you can find my stuff.
All right. And remember, I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday. Head to iTunes, subscribe to Locked On Thunder. Questions, comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FredKatz. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs and check out Thunder Road. You can follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder there. That's going to do it for today. Off for the weekend, back on Monday. Until then, Locked On Thunder is locking up.
The High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10. Select styles only.